So we're here talking about a recent demonstration that y'all were both a part of that is extremely significant given the moment that we are in right now, which is into the second week of the nationwide prison strike that's been going on. A lot of coverage, which is a new development, whereas other nationwide prison strikes, other actions around prison slavery in the past, in the recent past, and for as long as many of us can remember, have gotten little to no coverage, very intentionally. So great to have both of y'all discussing this vital issue. And we're going to discuss the noise demonstration that occurred out in Brooklyn August 21st. Before we go into that, though, y'all are both very active in the community, local here to New York City. So starting with you, Sis Shannon, if you will, I would just like to hear a little bit about the work that you do, the organization or organizations that you're representing, and what brought you to the noise demonstration on August the 21st.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity to have my voice heard. I'm Shannon Jones from Bronxites for NYPD Accountability. In the streets, we're known as Y Accountability, and we were born out of the chokehold murder of Eric Garner, filmed by Ramsey Order. He was murdered by the NYPD in July 2014. Since then, our organization has sustained its indignation to the non-indictment of Danielle Pantaleo and the ongoing operational terrorism of the police departments across the United States. We are abolitionists, we're Pan-Africanists, we're Black nationalists. So through that work, we've had the opportunity to interact with many organizations doing similar work, Black liberation work. So we came across Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee, which is IWOP, and we began organizing with them and other organizations within the city of New York around these RICO indictments taking place in NYCHA housing. So we're part of what is called the Stop the Raids Coalition. So that includes Y Accountability, BYP 100, the original Black Panthers, ICE Free NYC, Campaign to Bring Mumia Home, IWOC, and other organizations that contribute to support families, get some legal consultation, some assistance, commissary, and also provide healing support to the families that are experiencing this type of terrorism at the hands of the police state. So as an extension of that, that naturally led us to our involvement in the noise demonstration taking place on August 21st in Brooklyn in front of MDC Correctional off the BQE in the Gowanus, because obviously if we're doing this work around stopping raids, there are many brothers that have been entrapped and enslaved by this system. And it's critically important for us to have, as a coalition, a presence at that noise demonstration and make it clear to brothers and sisters and folks behind the wall that they have our support, as well as demands for their liberation.
Absolutely, yo. Absolutely. And if you could please, same question, Amrit.
Yeah. Peace, y'all. Appreciate having the opportunity to speak and be in conversation with you, Sis Shannon, and you, Tag. My name is Amrit Troon. I'm a member of Black Youth Project 100, that's BYP 100, specifically the New York City chapter. And we are a organizing collective, a group of Black 18 to 35-year-olds across the country. And we are prison abolitionists. We are Black queer feminists, which means that we try in our work to center the most marginalized amongst us in Black communities, right? So that includes Black women, that includes Black poor folks, that includes Black queer people, trans and gender non-conforming Black folks, and really try to organize across the intersections of our identities to address issues that too often are met with silence in the media as well as within our movement spaces. We are, as Shannon mentioned, also part of the Stop the Race Coalition. And I would just say, to add on to the descriptive account that you gave, Shannon, around, you know, who's involved, what the work has looked like, what motivated it. For me personally, what was so important about the demonstration and being there was to not necessarily or only confront the police and carceral system, but foremost to establish some kind of connection with the incarcerated people with whom we most centrally organize, right? This work does not move without them. And so often, you know, something that can slip from our frame of, you know, a view is how the carceral system itself is really invested in cutting our incarcerated people, right, off from their connections to family, from their connections with their communities, from their connection with people who they have affinity with politically, friends, the whole range, to really cut them off from any sorts of intimacy or connection with people. So that is what's really powerful for me about, you know, a noise demonstration specifically. And that's what brought me out there, and I know I'm sure it brought other folks out there too.
Great looks for y'all responses and also for the work that those responses represent. Because you mentioned, Amrit, the question of connections being severed. And that's so crucial to this question of these raids, these so-called gang raids, and what that represents to communities, not only throughout New York City or New York State, but throughout the country. And so this is a nationwide prison strike. It's gotten coverage throughout the country and coverage even internationally, as well as solidarity support internationally. So whoever would like to start on this question, before we go into the demonstration, which occurred outside of MDC, which is a federal detention facility, could y'all just speak to Stop the Raids, which has been mentioned, and the question of these so-called gang raids, and if you'd like, the question of community or connection and how all of that is related.
When the Stop the Raids Coalition was formed after the biggest quote-unquote gang raid in the history of the city of New York in April of 2016, where 120 folks were indicted as part of a RICO indictment. We actually came into it after Manhattanville Grant, where there were 101 indictments. So this had been going on. And when we came into it to begin our work in April of 2016 is when, you know, it was highlighted that brothers up to that point had already spent 2, 3, 4, 5 years in prison, basically isolated from their families. If families, you know, spoke out about the RICO indictment as a tactic to ethnically cleanse or genocide NYCHA communities, these folks were met with serious repression. And again, isolation, whether that be within solitary confinement, denial of letters, even isolation occurs where you don't have the ability to participate effectively in your own defense, which starts with the denial of bail. Because when you're not out on the street, you can't effectively participate in your own defense as far as gathering your own witnesses, refuting allegations from the prosecution, etc. So that's part of the format or the formula to isolate these folks to ensure that they would remain incarcerated for an extended period of time. So Stop the Raids Coalition, one, had to be become aware of the entire scope of what was going on, then hone in on supporting families from the BX-120 raid, and then subsequently the Boston Seacor raid, and then subsequently to that, the most recent Langston Hughes Van Dyke Houses raid in Brownsville. So the family support that we do really, really, really is critical, because families need a place to ask questions, understand the legal system, understand how to establish and maintain contact with their loved ones, be able to give them financial support, and et cetera. So that's what our coalition is about. We always want to be able to do more and be more for the affected Black people and brown people in these situations. And we strive to do more and be more for them. So that is essentially what it's about. And what I would add to that, these actions are part of Black self-defense. We have taken the initiative to defend ourselves against the militarized police state and the criminal injustice system and the system of incarceration by being proactive in our activities and support.
Yeah, I think a few things that I'm also thinking about in conversation with you, Shannon, is one, can't talk about so-called gang raids without talking about the gang database has been mobilized by the NYPD, right, to facilitate, right, the compilation of these conspiracy cases under the RICO Act. And part of what the existence of this database really signals for us is that, well, one, the surveillance, right, of Black and brown life, right, in public housing communities specifically, but of course, like, the surveillance extends outside of what you do, where you live, to, you know, who you hang out with, where you frequent, what clothes you wear. It's super arbitrary on what are the sort of qualifications necessary to qualify you as potentially, right, associated or with a gang. And that criminalization itself of just, like, walking around, just being, you know, being on social media, which is one of our strategies, is, you know, to really build political consciousness around, hey, you got to be careful about where you put your information at, where your image is, how you communicate, right, securely. That is such a burden on the one hand, but it's also at the same time, right, a practice that we build out of love for ourselves, out of self-defense, right, strategy that we share with each other. It does speak to the depths of the severing of connection that you mentioned, Tag, right? That extends outside of, right, institutions of incarceration. That also is something that we live with in the everyday, just walking around, going to work, trying to kick it on a Saturday afternoon. But these moments, these spaces where we also have connection with folks is also being punished and criminalized. That's one thing. And I think secondly, the sort of the impact it has on incarcerated people has been noted. What we also need to think about, and you're suggesting this too, is like it has such an impact on families and community members, right? Specifically, what I've noticed, and I know I'm not alone in noticing this, it's often Black mothers, aunties, grandmas who are the ones, right, who are mobilizing to get funds for commissary, who are the ones who are showing up at court dates, right, which are always inconvenient, can never be conveniently placed. I mean, there's nothing convenient about court date, right, and a battle that's stacked up against you. These are the ones, right, often Black women who are showing up and have to show up, don't really have an option. That's one thing. And secondly, on families and communities of support, right, is, you know, what happens when these folks come back home? some of the work that BYP 100 has been doing over the last year now, a little bit over a year, has been to really draw attention to the sort of repercussions of policing in public housing communities, specifically with regards to a policy of permanent exclusion, right, where folks who are arrested, accused, convicted of a crime, doesn't really matter, could be subject to removal from a NYCHA lease. And if the leaseholder does not remove that person, that whole family can be subject to eviction. And so we don't really have the data even to understand how kind of like how much of an earthquake that is in just the repercussions of living, right, once you've been targeted by gang rape. Where do you go to live afterwards? Is that going to be with folks who care for you, who love you, who have been with you, who are invested in your well-being, right? But, those are only two angles to really think about how the sort of severing of connection really is an integral kind of component of the gang policing, as well as policing in general and carceral systems in general.
Well, definitely appreciate those responses, and there's much to address around them. And so does anyone on the call want to start us off on what y'all experienced at this particular noise demonstration outside of MDC, where many of those who are indicted federally behind these raids of communities, and they are often targeted at public housing throughout the city, where many of these individuals have been caged to await sentencing or while their trials are going on. Just initial thoughts of the noise demonstration, what it was about, and your position as regards the August 21st noise demonstration.
Okay, I will speak on that first. I came to it after dark, and by that time it appeared to be, could have been 75 to 100 people there. It was loaded. Folks were across the street from the detention center and were utilizing every type of noise-making device at their disposal, whether that be actually using the shipping gates that were on the sidewalk, the gates that were on the sidewalk, pots and pans, drums, anything to make noise to call attention to the folks that are inside, behind the wall. There was reception by the folks behind the wall. They were flashing lights and flicking devices that they may have had, which we can't tell from that particular distance. So it is my understanding, which is subject to correction, that the Brooklyn Noise Demo was the largest showing in solidarity of the prison strike in the United States on the day of the strike. So, again, that is open to correction, but it is my understanding that New York City had the biggest turnout for that in terms of a direct action. My particular thoughts that I believe are of note here, however, is, you know, just entering the space for the noise demonstration, which is deeply problematic to say the least, is that 75% of the participants in the noise demonstration were white, or at minimum perceived to be white or Caucasian, European, etc. There were folks of color, black and brown, but certainly not enough that matched the levels of folks that are behind the wall. So that was something that really, really struck me, that, you know, particularly white anarchist organizations participated heavily, but we need the participation from Black nationalist, Pan-Africanist, Black liberation organizations to do this type of showing to ensure that these actions are led by the people most affected, and also the way Amrit described, as, you know, the most marginalized, or what BYP says are the margins of the margins, definitely need to be represented. So that was something that did quite frankly cause me some concern, and is something that as an organization, as Y Accountability, we have to step back and take a look at and develop ways to engage our own people around radical action. Our Black liberation is not going to happen on the internet. It's not going to happen on Facebook. It's not going to happen in your, you know, Instagram DM in any sort of way. It has to involve radical action with your fingers and your toes. So we have to work even more diligently in engaging ourselves in that type of radical action to ensure, which I'm sure Amrit will go into in more detail, to ensure that typical and standard behaviors of Caucasians and Europeans don't manifest in these spaces in terms of power dynamics. Because that's always an issue when we are dealing with Black liberation issues that contain many Caucasians or Europeans in the space. Power dynamics are always at issue. So those are my initial remarks about pulling up to the space and being a part of it.
Yeah, and in complete agreement with Shannon here on what was unnerving about the demo, which was from, and I was also there, I was there from the beginning till about, I would say, midway, a little bit over midway. And from, you know, what I witnessed was walking into a sea of white folks. I actually, to be anecdotal, like, I walked up to NDC and I walked past the group initially. I said, well, wait, I must be in the wrong place. Or hold on, let me take a circle and get my bearings right so I can come be prepared emotionally, spiritually, right? So I can show up in my best physical manifestation also. That's what we have to really work on. We have to think about it. I mean, one of the things that is also incumbent upon us to think about is, like, radical action in the style that white anarchists do it, in terms of really seeking out police confrontation in the streets, has a different danger involved for, I'm thinking specifically about Black people and Black young people who organize, who are abolitionists, who are invested in Black liberation. It's not just that the probability of arrest is increased, it's also a matter of what does that mean, right, for your life? What does that mean in terms of being, you know, excluded from civil society, being, having civil rights from you, potentially, right, for a period, if not indefinitely. Which is really just a long way of saying that how do we get, right, Black organizers and Black people who are committed to Black liberation, right? But from our communities, whether that is, you know, people we live with, people we maybe with coworkers with, also maybe people, they're people who we struggle with within organizations, maybe outside of them within movement work. How do we establish a sort of space and an event where it's like, we are ready for that? Knowing that so many of Black movement folks have already been through this in a way, have also already put themselves at risk, right? In action, maybe years ago, and been subject to the criminal justice system. Previously or ongoing, thinking also about, you know, Black undocumented folks who we organize with, you know, how do we create an environment where they can also be a participant in? Which is not to say that we should not be confronting the police, we should not be taking up space, that we should not be collecting space in a particular way, right, that insists on the connection with folks who are incarcerated, but also insists on the continual need to abolish prison and abolish the police. But there's got to be more intention involved. You got to think about who, you know, how is safety a part of the plan of action? How do folks know whether or not they're in a situation that's about to escalate, which is to say when they should step in and when they should step back for their own personal needs necessarily? How do we have a set of strategies for folks who engage in different levels of risk in a demonstration? These are, I think, Shannon, you're getting towards this too. These are also practices, strategies that Black folks committed to Black liberation are also studied in, and we hope, you know, so that the action would look different if it's ran, you know what I mean, if it's led by Black folks. Not to mention that the energy only got heightened, right, Shannon, when more Black folks, yourself included, and tag you too, as well as other folks, really stepped through and stepped forward and said, you know what, look, we about to turn this shit out. We're not here for play.
Exactly.
Which is a trip because, exactly. Like, how are you going to have all of y'all here, y'all putting in this labor, apparently, for this work, to gather and set up the space, right? But even when it comes down to it, you're not ready to step forward, to really up the ante. You have to take directions anyways. So my disillusionment is around, you know, well, what is it good for? I mean, it was great in the first half when it was just a need for body and for noises, really demand, you know, or to refuse the kinds of, like, severing of ties and connections that incarcerated people are subject to. But when it comes down to, like, leading chants, when it comes down to, you know, how you position yourselves in spaces, but it also comes down to what you're going to do tomorrow. You know, what are the sort of, like, outcomes, right, from an action? How does the demonstration also, you know, not just become a sort of cathartic release, but is part of a history of radical and abolitionist, right, movement work and organizing, right? These things build on each other. They accumulate. I'm not sure that white anarchists necessarily have the depth of that historical understanding or spiritual understanding.
Nor do they need to have it to do what it is that they do. They don't need to have it, which resorts back to the same power dynamic that will continue to play out. And that is what struck me about the demonstration in general, is that the noise piece, you know, I always make the joke that, you know, when it needed some saison on it, so it was up to the Black and Browns to really put that, you know, saison on the flavor of the demonstration, so to speak. And that's just from an aesthetic point of view. But after the noise demonstration and we took the streets unpermitted, you know, those power dynamics definitely manifested in terms of do white organized and white-led organizations have the willingness and ability to be led by Blacks? Is the prison strike about human rights for white anarchists, or is it about Black liberation for white anarchists? And these are those self-tests and self-checks that these organizations must run in order to be effective and in order for black people to organize with them in any sort of way in the future. I can't organize with an organization that would potentially put me in danger because they don't have the ability to consider appropriate protective formation of black and brown people, of queer femme and gender nonconforming people, folks that may not have documentation and et cetera, or certain statuses within this colonized, so-called United States. None of that was demonstrated as being considered at any point of the demonstration. So, again, that was deeply, deeply problematic, and it's something that we have a duty to work on because issues that affect black people should be organized, led, executed, curated by black people. That's like 101. So that is my reflection on that. And then also, I might add, if I'm behind the wall and I'm looking out of the window and looking at this broad range of support, I may not be able to have a competency of the dynamics that are what I am looking at. I just see this broad range of ethnic groups, racial groups, economic and class groups seemingly coming together to support me when the story behind the music is that may not be totally the case. So we also have an obligation to provide political education to folks that are behind the wall so they're clear on the dynamics because they also must know, hey, this ain't no kumbaya and it's not going to be kumbaya all the time in order for us to get things done. So, definitely some lessons going forward. Definitely some lessons there.
Please listen out for part 2 of this interview to be posted soon on Black Talk Radio Network.